I'm Richard and I'm an addict. I'm just going to thank Chris for asking me to share. I've got second thoughts now. Thanks for your share, Abby. I think you should have been doing this one, and perhaps I should have been doing that one. It would have been good to hear your many years of experience. Can you hear me properly?
Yes.
Yeah? At the back?
Yeah.
I think, first of all, you know, regardless of whether you're new or whether you've been around some years, if you're finding things difficult, it's been my experience that, and I found things difficult at the start, in the middle, and now at times, it's been my experience that the program can meet you wherever you're at. I've just found that I just need to be honest about that and ask for some help. And with that admission, generally comes some willingness. And I'm then able to get involved and my perspective changes. So I'll tell you a little bit, I'll tell you how I've been feeling sitting here. Because when Chris asked me to share, you know, I've done lots of shares in the time I've been clean. And I don't mind the idea of sharing appeals to me. The actual experience of it, once I'm here, is different. I was telling Mark, a fella I met years ago, early in recovery, he was in a meeting in Chelsea, in fact, and the pot came round and he was skint, and he was so self-obsessed, he dropped his street door key in the pot. You know what's coming, didn't you? Anyway, at the end of the meeting, the secretary said, look, someone's mistakenly dropped their key in the pot. Would anyone like to claim it? If so, come and see me after, and I'll give you it. But, no. He wasn't having it. And he went home and kicked his street door. That's the level of self-obsession that I suffered from. And I was having pangs of that sitting up here. I don't know if you can identify with that level of self-obsession. Well, you just can't stop thinking about yourself. And I had no way out of that previously. And the best way I found out of that, and it wasn't a conscious thing, I didn't think, oh, I need a way out of feeling self. I didn't even know that language. It wasn't the type of language that I used. But the most effective thing I found to treat that was drugs. And not all drugs, I've got to admit. I started using drugs when I was about... I've got 40 minutes, so I need to pack this out a bit. I started using drugs at about... I think it was about 15, something like that, which, where I come from, is not early. I knew the SP on drugs. It was around me. You know, that was the kind of culture and an environment that I grew up in. It was very close to home. My brothers were junkies. People around me were at it. My mother. So I was very aware of the effects of particular drugs and what they did to your life. I wasn't a fool, and I could see what was happening around me. And I thought I was a bit different. I thought I was a bit special. And I still do at times, in many respects. Gradually, and one of the things I'm grateful for, that as time's gone by in recovery, and it's been that in particular, you know, thinking I'm different or special, is gradually wearing off, and that's has been quite a relief to me, because I feel like I'm human, and I feel like I can relate to people, and I couldn't for many years, and I'll get to that. But what was I talking about? Yeah, being special and people around me, you know, using drugs and me looking around and seeing what that did to people. And I thought to myself, like, I guess many of us do, not all of us, but many of us, I won't do that. You know, that won't happen to me. But for one reason or another, nothing special, you know, there was nothing tragic that caused this to happen. It just began to appeal to me. My pals were smoking, having a puff. And, you know, I wanted to get involved. You know, I was sort of in a state of drift. I didn't do that well at school. I wasn't engaging that well at school. And I felt like I lacked purpose. And, you know, when I started smoking puff, which, by the way, I didn't really enjoy that much. I must add that. It added to my levels of self-obsession. I remember sitting around in rooms, you know, with older guys I'd hang out with and, you know, smoking. No, I'd just hang out with them because they'd have untold puff and they'd give me, you know, let me roll the joint, and I'd get so self-obsessed. You know, I had to be in at a certain time, you know. And once I started puffing, I couldn't get home because I was too worried about getting up and leaving. yeah, you know, thinking what they'd think and what they'd think once I left. So I'd get home and get a clump. But I'd rather get a clump than leave, you know. So, yeah, it appealed to me and it started to give me some direction and give me a purpose. I'd wake up in the morning and go to school. I was about 14, I think, thinking about it. I'd go to school and I'd have a bit of puff, only a little bit, but I'd feel excited at the fact that I was going to get to school, meet my pals, roll a joint, you know, and then do whatever we did for the day. So it started to give me something, but quickly, you know, and this is something I've learned about myself, I get bored with things, jobs, clothes, people. You know, it's part of my personality. The defaults all still come up now, but how I behave and act has changed. So I got bored with puffing, and I saw other people doing other things, so I wanted to try something else, and that was what my using was like. And I think for the first few years, you couldn't differentiate me from my pals in how much or how I used. You know, if you looked at us objectively, you wouldn't have seen much difference. In fact, many of them used more than me. But there came a point where I discovered drugs that really hit the spot for me. And I remember it was a fella. He used to come on our estate where I hang about. And he'd call me out. He was quite a bit older than me. And he was a bit of a reluctant set, because he was probably all right in some ways, but he was a bit of a bully. And he'd come around and say, "Where's Nixon?" And I'd tell my friends, "Don't tell him I'm here," because I'd have to go out thieving with him. And he'd come and he'd say, "Where's Nixon?" And I'd say, "I'm here." I'd go along with him. And we'd do a burglary. And this one night he said, "Right, we're going to go and buy some coke. And we're going to smoke it. Crack." And I was up for it because I just want something out of what I've just done. You know, I've gone and put my Libby at risk and I want something back. So, you know, I didn't really like this guy. I was frightened of him. I wanted to go and be with my pals, but I want this thing. You know, I want some remuneration off of what I've just done. And I remember we were in a lift shaft in an estate and I started smoking. And I remember quite distinctly going from feeling very anxious and pessimistic and not really liking this guy and wanting to get away to thinking, actually, You're all right. It had a profound effect on me. And it was ingrained in my memory. And you know, they talk about crossing a line, and I believe that that's when I crossed the line, because it really hit the spot. It brought me into the moment, and I felt optimistic, and I felt like I could talk and be honest, you know, and all my worries melted away. And then from then on, that was my route, really. I must have been about, I think I was probably about 17. I wasn't going nowhere in my life at that point at all. I wasn't working. I had a job for 3 weeks. And I abandoned it. So I was just hanging about the estate, nicking out cars, doing the odd burglary. Big stuff. Over the next few years, I just, about in a period where, in the mid-90s, there was something we started doing, and we started earning a lot of money. It was unbelievable, because I'd never had money like that before. I was able to go out and buy lots of clothes and go out partying and smoke lots of crack. And that's what soon became the biggest thing in my life, was getting money to smoke crack, and I really liked it. But I remember, you know, I'd spend all my money, and I'd think to myself after I've done it, you know, why did I do that? Why have I done the lot? One time I was coming back from, I lived in Holloway, and I was coming back from Tottenham, and I'd spent a lot of money over like 3 nights. The drugs weren't affecting me, I got a cab back from Tottenham to Holloway, and I had my last £50 after I'd paid the cab. As we got into Holloway, I said, go back to Tottenham. And I spent another £50. And that, I thought to myself, why did I do that? These drugs aren't even affecting me anymore. You know, I'm not even getting higher. I'm not getting that buzz that I want. That was to become a theme of my life. You know, I just couldn't stop once I'd started. You know, regardless of the regardless of what I said when I started, you know, I'm only going to spend this much, or I need to go and see my brother tomorrow, or I need to, you know, meet my girlfriend. That was a big one. I'll meet you after work. I wanted to meet her after work because I liked her. I'm fortunate enough to get some money in my pocket, and I'd pop in the local crack house just buy one, or, you know, whatever. And I couldn't leave. And I remember at the time, I used to think to myself, why can't I leave? You know, why can't I just go? I'd do my money, and then I'm sitting about, like, looking. You know, looking at people, because I want something now. That was what it was like. And, you know, like I said, I wasn't stupid. I wasn't educated, but I wasn't silly. And I started getting in trouble and going in and out of institutions. And when I got in trouble, I'd say to myself, and I meant it, you know, because I spent a lot of time in institutions, and it was kind of the norm, but I didn't like it. I hated it, in fact. I'm small, I'm not that hard, I haven't got plenty of resources, you know, so it was hard graft at times, especially in some of the young offenders institutions. It was graft. So I'd go away and I'd think, I ain't going back to prison again. And I'd promise myself and my girlfriends and friends who were sensible and, you know, parents that I weren't going to use again, I'd come out and I'd use. Because I knew, I used heroin and crack. That was my thing, mostly. People don't use that generally. They don't use it socially. Occasionally, I've met people who seem to be able to dabble in it. They can dabble in it, but most don't. Not in the places that I smoked, anyway. And so I knew going back to that was silly. You know, I knew it wasn't smart, but I'd come out and I'd just get, I'd be full of this feeling. I think I just need to get it out my system. Yeah, sort my head out. And I'd use once, and a few months later I'd be back in that same place. And that was what happened to me over a period of years. Until I was about 20, I'm going to speed this up a bit, until I was about 23, I ended up in a rehab. Not because I wanted to stop, but because that's where my life forced me. And I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, and I was introduced to the idea about being powerless, that when I start, I can't control it. That was the only thing that stuck. I never got a sponsor. I found my voice really quick, and I was able to share. It didn't take long. I never done anything because I didn't think it was relevant to me. I thought I'd stay clean, that the professionals would fix me, and I'd come here. I don't even know why I thought I'd come here. I didn't think about things, you know. I just got moved along, you know. But, you know, regardless, I used again. And what I discovered, because I had a really big consequence hanging over my head. Like I said, I didn't like going to prison. And when the judge sent me to the rehab, he said, if you... nauseate, he didn't say nauseate, but he said, if you, you know, if you don't complete this, whatever, I'll give you 4 years. So I didn't want to go to prison for 4 years. But I could not use. And I went back up in front of him and he gave me 4 years. Because what happened was I started to use and I tried to rein it back in. And I came to meetings, but I couldn't. I couldn't not use. It was off. And I understood the first thing about being powerless is that physically I can't control the amount I take. And that was it. I understood. So when I was in jail, there was meetings in there, and I wanted to get clean, and I wanted parole. So I started going to meetings regularly. And I was serious about being clean. Very serious, in fact. In fact, when I got clean, I realised how serious I am. I'm not someone with a happy-go-lucky disposition. I'd like to be, but it's not my experience. And that's why I think drugs have such a profound effect on me. They lighten me up. I'm less uptight. And I don't know if any of you are like that. I don't know. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're not. And I got involved in NA when I was in the prison. And I'd done everything they suggested. They said, go to meetings, share, do service, work the steps. I didn't really work the steps. We'd done something. They introduced me to it. But it was good. It was a novelty, and I liked it, and it kept me focused, and it gave me an environment in which I could start to do this. And I got involved. And what my experience is of being clean, initially it's great, and then as time goes on, it gets worse. Yeah. That's some hope for anyone who's new. It got worse for me, and I remember sitting in a cell with my friend who was a bit older than me, and we'd been clean about the same amount of time, and I was waking up, and I'd be all right for about a split second. And then it was like my whole world came in to focus. And I'd have to have cold showers at 7 a.m. And, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I'm sharing about this in meetings. You know, I'd defy anyone to ask me, you know, that I wasn't in touch with what was going on for me, because I was very much in touch with how painful life was. That's all I felt. And I remember trying to explain this to my pal in the cell. And I'm talking, I'm not even looking at it, I'm just expressing myself. And I said, like, I don't know what's going on, it's just this feeling that I've got. And I looked round at him, I said, do you know what I mean? And he's sitting there, like, laughing, smiling. And he said, no. And it's funny now. But at the time, it weren't funny. Because what I thought was, because I got clean when I was 24, and I thought, I'm too young. That's what it is. Maybe I have to, you know, you hear horror stories of people having to lose limbs or, you know, banging up in their neck. And, you know, getting lifed off or whatever, you know. I thought maybe that's what needs to happen for me to have had enough. But I'd been through the ringer, you know. I never had an easy story getting here. So I was confused now. So I'm going to meetings, I've got out of this place, and I'm going to meetings in outside, and people saying, work the program. I didn't even know what that meant. I thought, what does that mean? You know, does that mean come to meetings? Does it mean share? I didn't know. I didn't ask anyone, mind you. But it got to a point where it became so painful, and what happened was that I understood that I would use, regardless of my desire to stay clean. And as soon as I realised that I would use regardless, I understood that not only was I powerless when I picked up, but I'm powerless before I pick up. That for some reason, I can either see the problem drugs are going to, you know, what drugs are going to do to me, rather than what they do for me, but do it anyway. Or I'll just forget and it seemed like a good idea, and this really had a profound effect on me. And that's when I believe I became a hopeless addict. Not when I was using, like I was using. At that point, I felt broken. And I was about 20 months clean. I don't know what kept me clean. I don't know what has kept me clean all this time. I tell you the stuff that I've done. But I was clean. So it gave me enough juice to get to this point, coming to me and sharing and being willing. And I had an honest desire to want better and to be of benefit. And I run out of steam, and I run out of bravado, and I run out of talk, and I ask for help, and I thought, I really hope that you're telling the truth now, you know, that there's something in this, because if there isn't, he told me not to swear, or he asked me, if this doesn't work, I'm screwed, because I've either got psychiatric problems, it's debatable. or I haven't had enough and I'm going to have to use drugs again. So I was confused. I was baffled. And fortunately, I was in a meeting, I was in an NA meeting, and I met people who seemed different. They weren't like a manifestation of my head. They seemed level-headed. They were getting on with their life. I felt anxious, as per usual, and they won my confidence. And I asked for a sponsor, and I got this man who's very different from me. He's awfully posh and older, just different than me. But he sat me down and he reassured me and he bought me a coffee and he said to me, listen, Richard, he said, look, I understand what you're going through. And he said, if you do what we've done, he said, your life's going to change. That's what he said to me. And he said, I'm going to give you some things to do whilst we go through the steps and they'll keep you safe. And I felt I trusted him for some reason because I didn't have nothing. I couldn't go back. So I was at a point where I had to go forward and he won my confidence. And I threw myself into it. And over the next few months, I went through the steps and I started to feel a lot lighter. And my perspective changed and I really threw myself in with this group. I got a home group, I started to do service, and I was down in Plymouth, and I thought my life was ended when I ended up in Plymouth. If anyone's from Plymouth, I grew to love it, but my life changed. I felt the change. And over the next, you know, I got involved. I had a home group, I had service, I had a sponsor. I started to work the steps. And I went through the steps. And over the next few years, I had a really good time. And my life opened up. So, and I went and got an education, and I rebuilt relationships, and I made lots of new relationships, and I felt differently about myself. I felt new confidence. You know, things started to change. It weren't all, you know, all plain sailing. I had to do this. I had to be involved. And I had a great time and I felt new hope. And I felt the most important thing I felt and I knew that I didn't have to use, because I had this framework and they introduced me to prayer and they introduced me to being honest, regardless of how that felt. And they introduced me to service and turning up and getting there early and being there despite how I felt. My life was generally run by my emotions, but I was now able to start putting in actions regardless of how I felt. Like, for example, when I was a kid, if I got up in the morning and I didn't feel like going to school, I never went. Or if I didn't feel like signing on, I wouldn't sign on. Yeah, they're the only two examples I can give you. The rest of it, I just done anything based on what I wanted and how I felt. That determined my actions. And now, for some reason, I had the capacity to start doing things irrespective of how I felt and irrespective of how I thought. And it changed my life. And within this, I'd done some amends. But what I thought was that now I'm going to go out. I've got the program under my belt. I'm going to go out. I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a girlfriend. I'm going to get all the things that conventional society tells you makes you happy. Because I never really got any of that stuff before. So I had to learn new stuff. And I thought this will enhance my well-being. And some of it did. But some of it, ultimately, conventional means to well-being never satisfied me prior to using drugs, and they don't really satisfy me now. But I had to go through that experience in order to understand it. And at about 5 years into that process, I was in a meeting, I was really well, and there was another story going on inside me. Because there come a time for me when, and it might happen to you, or you may be there right now, I don't know, where I was portraying one thing on the outside whilst it was a different story on the inside. And now I understand people who try and live quite a conventional life and they go to work and they've got a family and they've got a drug habit as well, and the conflict that must come with that must be terrible. Because I know what the conflict was like for me, being clean, being in this fellowship, trying to portray one thing whilst living another thing. And I was coming apart, and I thought, I'm going to use drugs again. And where I came from at the time, they told me that you work the steps once, and you get on with it. Mm-hmm. And so I was stuck with that, and I didn't want to leave this group because I felt frightened. And but in the end, I thought, I have to, because I'm going mad, and I'll use anyway, so I might as well do it. So I went off and I found another fella, and I worked the steps with him, and we went through the steps again, and it was a whole new experience. I was a bit more awake, and I had a different experience with it. And over the next 3 years, what I'd done, because I'd not done much amends, because after all, you know, the money that I was earning now was for me. It was to buy new stuff, which I thought would make me happier. But I didn't. So I threw myself head first into making amends, and I've probably become really, I've become completely obsessed with it. I'd say, but I told my girlfriend, look, I can only spend 20% of my surplus income on anything, you know, the rest of it, 80% is going on amends. I can't believe that, you know, some of the stuff I told her. I went back to crack houses, I went back to dealers. I've got some really good stories I'd love to tell you, but I ain't got time. But I went and done these amends, and some of them frightened me, and some of them were uplifting, and some of them were just pathetic. You know, I'm obsessional, so I wrote down every arm I'd ever done. But it culminated, I went back, and I was a thief, and I stole lots and done lots of crime, and I went and made amends for this stuff, and I thought, I've committed so much crime that's been unaccounted for that I can't possibly go back to these people, because some of the things I've done, I just couldn't turn up and knock on their door. And I ended up, you know, I got a lawyer, and I went to the police, and they said, are you serious, Richard? But I did, and the reason I've done this, I'm gutted now in some ways, but I'd done what I believed was right, and I had to do at that point, and that's all you can ask of anyone. I ticked it off, because I so desperately wanted to stay clean, I so desperately wanted well-being and to be of benefit in my life to me and the people around me. So I went and done this thing, and I ended up in court, and I'm like years clean. I'm in a job, and I'm in the dock at Southwark, Knightsbridge Crown Court, and I thought, you know, what am I doing? But I meant it, and the judge was astounded. No, he really was. I think he was a good advert for the 12 steps because he wanted to hear all about it. And he understood what I was doing in my life and that I was being helpful and I had a responsible position, and he gave me a suspended sentence, and it was the only time I hadn't been to prison, and it was a relief. And 5 minutes. And I thought, once I'd done all this stuff, yeah, I'm going to give you more hope now. I thought, once I'd done all this stuff, yeah, that I'd reach a state of bliss. Because that's something I've discovered about myself, yeah. I want to contrive certain states of mind which I like, meaning I want to feel good all the time. That's what it means. And I will indulge that. I will avoid feeling uncomfortable. And I will replace feeling uncomfortable. I'll try and swap anger for love. I'll try and stop negative for positive, because I want to feel good at all costs. And what I've grown to realise is that's completely unachievable for me, anyway. And completely neutralising as well. And this was the thing, when I said earlier on about being now able to identify with people. And just, you know, I went through that and I stayed involved, but what I found was, what I found is that I can't maintain that. I can't maintain that state of mind. And all the frameworks and methods and techniques that I've learned here, working the steps, praying, meditating, sharing, turning up, there came a point when none of that would make me feel better, would make me feel positive, would make me feel grateful, would make me feel all the things, all the nice things that we like, yeah? And most of that has happened over the last year. I came back to London 2 years ago, thought it'd all be great, you know, loads of fellowship, people I know, was in a flat, was in a new job. She'd come here to do her PhD. We split up. Obviously, I move out. Living back at my mum's, yeah, who's at it, in a job which actually is not what I thought it'd be, yeah. Don't know that many people, because all the people I did know are either at it or dead or in jail. Fellowship's a very different landscape here. And what I began to experience is feeling quite alone, unsure of myself, not really knowing what's going to come. And all of that was quite uncomfortable. It's a lot of confusion, you know, how getting older. My dad got really ill. Getting older, man. You don't realise, when, especially if you get clean young, yeah, that you get older. The longer you stay clean, you get, you know. And I'm moving towards 40, and I know I'm not going to live forever. And I feel like I'm getting older as well. And all of that's scary. You know, and everything that seems stable and secure in my life, you know, your parents are there and your friends and your home group and all that, was all gone. It was all gone. So I started to feel really unsure. And over the last year, what I've done is that there's nowhere to turn other than what you, perhaps, or I will call God. And that might mean something different to me than what it means to you. But I don't know what other word to use for it. And I've had to seek out things and people that are going to support that. And I still do the basic things here. I turn up and I work with others and I get to meetings and I share with friends. And I've found out how important it is to be able to connect with people and be honest and use the fellowship. Yeah, I can't do this on my own. I can't just do it me and God or me and Steps. Or me, you know, I need the whole sort of package. And also I've had to look for things outside of here which have complemented and enhanced this and allowed me to be okay with feeling all the things that I don't like feeling. Yeah. Some of you might know what I'm on about when I say that. I hope you do. I've needed people. I've needed to be honest. I've needed to be open. There's a line in here, I don't know where it is. It's my ignorance. It says you can't save your face and your ass at the same time. Pretty sure it's in there. And you can't. It's one or the other, you know. But I've only learned that through experience. So I'll finish on this, Charlie. So my experience really is that I've come here, I've got sponsored, I've turned up, I've been honest to the best of my ability. I've always stayed involved. I've been willing to be transparent, to work with others despite how I feel. And as a result, I can't say it's a result of doing them things, but they're the things I've done, and I've stayed clean. And I've been given the capacity to face my life so far with what's come up. Good or bad. Well, not good or bad, but pleasant or unpleasant. And I'm still here. And I ain't special. Well, I'm not. And so, whatever point you're at, new, or been around for quite some years, and if you're struggling, you know, this can meet you wherever you're at, and I'm willing to talk to anyone if necessary, or if you wanna. But it's changed my life. I feel like I'm growing up. And it's good to be with you. Thanks. Cool.